You're listening to the After Hours Podcast. My name's Justin. I'll be joined on this pod by Eric and Giorgio. And in this pod, we'll be having a conversation about this past week's sermon and thinking about how that sermon applies to our lives as we seek to be transformed by God's grace into faithful servants of all. Thanks for being here. Welcome back to the After Hours Podcast. Here with Eric today. What's up, Eric?
Hey, man. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Today we get the talk about the latest device, which is lust. Should be a fun conversation.
Yeah, man. It was it was a great sermon. Really enjoyed it on Sunday. Appreciate you tackling a topic that is complicated, sensitive. We were talking a little bit before we started recording that it is pervasive in our culture in ways that many of the other ones are as well, but maybe culturally in ways that are unique with lust. Certainly every time you flip on the TV or whatever. And yeah, man, it's a big one. So thanks for tackling that and doing a great job.
Yeah, man. We live in a unique time in history when it comes to this particular vice. And so not unique in the sense of like, it's always been a struggle for human beings.
Right. For sure. So, for sure.
Yeah. There's some unique things in our culture and world that makes this like particularly challenging.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, dude. How do you want to dive into this? Do you want to, I have some notes here in front of me that I took listening to the sermon. You know, we can talk obviously about the passage, talk about, some of the different things that you touched on, but yeah, you have any thoughts on how you want to dive into this? Do you want to maybe just give a few ideas about how you were thinking about this passage? You've had a couple of weeks off of preaching. I mean, you've been doing stuff, obviously. It's not like you've been sitting at home. Yeah. But you've had a couple of weeks to sort of like think about it. Maybe what was like running through your head as you were, or running through your heart as you were kind of prepping for this and starting to think about this topic, think about this sermon?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to get to a couple of things. One is just the conversation about desire as a whole, and then also, you know, talking about lust from a perspective of like it has a thing beneath the thing, typically for us,
right?
Especially if it's like a persistent like sin struggle.
Yeah.
The thing behind the thing is often control.
Yeah.
Or the escape of from risk and vulnerability. And so I wanted to really kind of make sure that those two things got talked about. And so really built the sermon around the idea that another person is not a strong enough container to hold all of our desires.
Yeah.
We have strong desires.
Yeah.
Sexually, physically. And yet those strong desires can't be contained or held by a person. And that, you know, rightly ordering our loves or desires is the first step to somehow being able to navigate lust. And so that was really where I wanted to structure the aim of the sermon. And to give space, like for those who this is a persistent struggle in their life, to not go the way of shame. So that shame is a weak thing to battle this. If anything, shame just makes lust have more room, not less room.
Yeah.
And so, and I do think that in the Sermon on the Mount, I think that Jesus certainly wants us to consider the weightiness of lust.
Right.
That it is a weighty sin and topic.
Right.
But at the same time, like, the only way to battle it is with stronger desires rightly affixed.
Yeah. No, that's good. Yeah, I loved how you teased all that out. I do feel like a lot of the things that you said about desire rightly ordered could apply to a lot of the different pieces in it, really to all of the things in the series. That's kind of the angle we're taking, yeah, yeah, like at this right. whole series. Yeah. But I liked that you sat on that more in this one than maybe you did in Pride, as you were kind of orienting the series. And it's been me and G the last couple of weeks, but yeah. So I really liked how you did that. I thought you did a really great job at that. Yeah, I really liked, especially like your illustrations, like both like the mirage in the desert and then also, like Costco. Like I thought were both really good illustrations to talk about like this longing for satisfaction that we, either like foolishly pursue, like looking at like the mirage in the desert, you keep going deeper and deeper into the desert thinking it's right there. It never is.
Right.
Or the Costco thing where you're just like snacking on a bunch of junk. And, which we never end up buying. Yeah, right. Like I never bought anything that I don't think that I've actually sampled there.
Right. Me too.
You just keep snacking.
It's
and
pretty
you're
rare.
Like
sometimes it happens, but it's pretty rare.
I also like, I'm like the sucker with salesmen too, that like every time I have a sample, I'm always like, yeah, that's really good. Yeah, man, meet me next time. Like the guy cares. Like he doesn't care. But I always feel like I need to like, yeah, man, that is good. Yeah, yeah. I like that. Maybe next time.
You almost feel embarrassed that like they're like, hey, right here. And you're like, maybe next time.
Yeah, we're not here for that today. Yeah, we got like $800 of other stuff in our cart, but we're not going to get that. But yeah, but I really liked those two illustrations to talk about desire and like attempting to satisfy desire in ways that are that stimulate, that like touch the desire, like in real ways, but aren't actually nourishing, like aren't actually what God intended for that desire to be satisfied by. And again, I thought that was really great. And I liked to, and again, we were talking about this a little bit ahead of time as well, but just reemphasizing the fact that like desire itself is not bad. And especially like the desire for to express your sexuality, to like the things that come, the desire that ultimately ends in lust, like that sexual desire is not dirty. It's not dangerous in and of itself. Like it's a God-given good thing. And so I really liked that you hit on that and framed it that way as well. It's really important.
Because for the most part, I feel like, you know, for us, a lot of like how we frame this is that it's dangerous.
Right.
And at best, like the best view of desires is dangerous. And so you should handle it with like intense care. And of course, I think that there's some truth to that. Sure. At the same time, if that's all we emphasize about desire, that it's dangerous or it's bad or dirty.
Yeah.
Then how do we live? Because sexual desire.
Right.
And the desire that comes from sex, which is intimacy, connection.
Right.
Those are like some of the strongest desires we feel as human beings.
Right, right.
So what are we to do with that if it's only dangerous or it's only bad, dirty, wrong?
Yeah.
How do we then live? How do we navigate the real feelings that we feel in our bodies with this desire?
Right.
I think that the Bible is bigger and deeper than that.
Yeah.
And is trying to help us like live as real humans in a real world with ways God has created us.
Yeah.
And I think it has had a lot of messaging, a lot of problems. And like, you know, as pastors, I think one of the things that we deal with a lot in counseling people is this particular thing.
Right.
And all, not just like it's the baggage that someone brings into it that causes all sorts of problems.
For sure.
And then it's also the aftermath of things where it's been misused.
Yeah.
That there's a lot of painful aftermath.
And
we're working with people like this all the time.
Right. Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Carrie and I have done a lot of premarital counseling over the years, and it's always like the most fun and least fun topic at the same time to talk
about.
Yeah,
that's right.
Sexuality. Yeah, for sure. And you intro'd the sermon talking a little bit about purity culture. I think for many of us in the room, and me included, like grew up in like height of purity culture, kind of conservative evangelical culture. I think that touched a lot of people in the room, and I think was really a really important thing to say. And again, I like the way that you said it. I think sometimes I've heard some different people like on like podcasts or books like wail on purity culture, but they don't. The way that they wail on it sounds a little bit like, hey, I just kind of want to do whatever I want to do. Like, there's a little bit of like American individualism and autonomy, like run rampant in the way they're like talking about purity culture being bad. And it kind of grinds my gears a little bit. Cause I'm like, okay, like there were major issues, but like the way that they were talking about it didn't love, but I loved the way that you talked about it again, which we just said that like, that there was just a whole movement around conversations of sexuality, especially for young adults, for teens. Like I remember like youth group for me, middle school, high school. Yeah, that just made sexual desire dangerous and dirty. Those were the two. I love the way you talked about that. I think that was really helpful.
And getting married that didn't. And if you are someone who's been married, there's many of you that might be listening that hasn't been your story, but
yeah,
and that has its own like weights and things that come attached with it. But I feel like when you get married, it doesn't like suddenly everything goes away. That the purity culture kind of vibe that we learned also made it hard to live as married people when it comes to actually having sex.
Yeah.
And I have so many conversations about this.
Right.
And I myself have struggled with the realities of that.
Sure.
And so I think that was definitely part of like my experiential piece that I want to try to help us navigate that better.
Yeah.
As the church.
Yeah.
So that maybe the next generation, my kids, your kids, don't have to walk into their married life with some of that baggage.
Right. Yeah.
They're going to be baggage no matter what.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But some of that baggage might be at least alleviated or be dealt with a little bit more gently.
Yeah.
And again, it's one sermon. You can't accomplish all of that, but like trying to stir people's imaginations around the text, around the application of the text was definitely part of the thing that was in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Do you want to jump into the text a little bit?
Yeah, let's do.
Yeah. Great passage. Do you want to start with the topic of amputation or the topic of child sacrifice?
Yeah. Two good ones, right?
No, it's both a very like well-known and like quote unquote straightforward passage, like being in the Sermon on the Mount, but also one that is arresting, in the sense that, Jesus is commanding, or not commanding, but encouraging people hey, instead of struggling with lust, like just pluck out your eyeball, cut off your hand, is a shocking statement. And I thought you did a good job talking about that and addressing that and then talking about this word Gehenna and where that comes from. It was a nice piece of like historical biblical context that is can be lost to us, like as not only English speakers and readers, but also as like being millennia removed from the original context. But say more about the passage and just kind of how you were approaching that and anything else you want to say about that stuff.
Yeah, I think I read a book by a long time ago. It's probably early 2000s, mid 2000s. This guy named Don Everett wrote a book called The Smell of Sin.
Oh, aren't you?
And he's like a crew or university guy.
Okay.
Maybe like kind of on the edges of like the emerging church, but he was more like of a conservative voice in the emerging church.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And, the book stuck with me a lot of different ways. But I think one of the things he emphasized from this particular text is just that the smell of sin, like the sensory realities of what Jesus is teaching here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like if in fact Gehenna is the trash heap outside the city dump,
right.
That's always burning.
Yeah.
Like the very tangible nature of how that would have hit the original hearers. I wanted to draw that out. And there's all this history that's attached to this with Israel's story. But, Jesus is just making the very real thing is like, do you want your desires to take you to this place where your life is burned up?
Yeah.
Like sitting in the pile outside the city gate at Gehenna. Is that what you want? Or would it be better to like cut off whatever it is that would lead you there?
Right. Right.
And of course Jesus is painting this picture of, lust and adultery, which we didn't really necessarily get into particularly in this text in the preaching moment. But like that it isn't enough just to not commit adultery, you know, like
right.
lusting after someone of the heart, of you know, wanting their bodies,
yeah,
wanting to possess them, wanting to objectify them,
right,
is just as sinful
right.
as adultery would be. And right. so if this is what you're dealing with, but you're thinking you're good because you're not committing adultery, well, the trash heap is still the end result, end
yeah.
game
yeah,
of
yeah,
this
yeah.
trajectory.
Yeah.
And so it's a very like sensory text, and it is a very jarring
yeah.
thing that Jesus is saying. And he is telling us that our desires, our loves disordered.
Right.
Like our lives can be wrecked by this.
Right. Right.
Not, and our life with God can be wrecked by this
yeah.
in some
yeah.
ways.
Yeah. No, that's good. And I think like what is really interesting about the passage, and this is true in other places on the Sermon Mount, other places of Jesus's teaching, right? Where his focus, not to the exclusion of what we do with our bodies, but it's on the heart mm-hmm. that's what he's focused on first, you know, and there's many things that we could say about sexuality and like how that plays out in our bodies in the real world, like sexual ethics, like other commands in the scriptures about sexuality, about marriage, about whatever. I mean, there could be and have been many sermon series done on such a thing. But here, our focus in this sermon series and then Jesus' focus in this passage is on the heart to say, mm-hmm. hey, we need to start here. Mm-hmm. What's going on inside? What are your desires fixed on? Where are you seeking to find relief, or where are you seeking to find fulfillment for these core longings, these deep desires that I've placed in you? And when those are misguided, it leads you in the wrong direction. And mm-hmm. so I think the way that you approach the passage and the focus there, in connection with the passage is faithful to the passage. It's about desire. It's mm-hmm. about our hearts. It's about what's going on the inside. Again, much we could say, and you can't say everything in one sermon. But yeah, but I really liked that. And I thought the way that you talked about it, the way you explained those two things, the history of Israel's story, the trash heap, Gehenna, it was really good. Really, that sensory nature of it, I think, drove home the point well.
Yeah, and the reality for Israel, right, is like that their alignment with the Canaanite religions and their intermixing of the mm-hmm. Canaanite religions led them to all sorts of like evil. You know, part of that evil is called prostitution. Part of that evil is,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
child sacrifice.
Right.
Which is things that like, man, that seems so. And yet, like if we were to tease this out for us in a modern world, like our unordered desires do the very same thing.
Yeah.
Like, and I didn't say this explicitly in the sermon, but like there is some reality to like, when our lust goes unchecked,
yeah,
there are some places that it can lead us that are very terrible.
Yeah,
and there is children do bear
mm-hmm.
weight of this.
Yeah,
both unborn babies and children.
Yeah,
and the results of this are pretty devastating to children. And so I think there is some correlation to
yeah, it's interesting
that like
yeah.
if we, but again, if it starts with how are our loves being ordered, where are our desires being aimed?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
On something too big, to something too small, or something big enough to hold them. And you know, we talked a little bit before the pod just about like there are boundary lines that the Bible gives us when it comes to ethics, and you know, why would you know, sex before marriage be something that's important to God? Well, it is like to help rightly aim our desires
mm-hmm.
For our good, for our flourishing.
Yeah.
And yet, like, it's not the end all to be all. There's a
that's
place
right.
for repentance and renewal and repair and restoration.
Right.
Even when we fail in that.
Yeah.
There's still grace remains. But
yeah.
there are things that this unchecked can like lead to like really broken. It is Gehenna. Like that's
right.
where
right.
We feel that and know that and have seen it.
Yeah. And when somebody like finds themselves in Gehenna, like it's not all of a sudden.
Yeah. Right.
Typically, right? It's like there's been a long pattern and series of like decisions and compromises and unrepented of behaviors that and often as well like a lack of community and repentance and secrecy and these things right that leads someone there. Yeah.
Yeah, often it's the shame that leads you to the worst places.
Yeah.
Like you're in the inability to come clean. To be honest, to be vulnerable, becomes this like petri dish for us, where the thing just grows.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. You with the amputation piece, you just made the comment, you know, that Jesus here is not encouraging like a subtle nudge towards self improvement, and you talked a little bit later in the sermon about how we have to remove the things that destroy us. And you told the story from C.S. Lewis, The Great Divorce, is that right?
Great Divorce.
Yeah, about the red lizard. I've read less Lewis than I should. It's on the list. But so I didn't know that story. And man, I was like on the edge of my seat, dude. You did a great job communicating that story. And I think it is like a perfect, I mean, leave it to Lewis, right? But
man, it is like it's just pretty
such
perfect.
I know. It's just such a great illustration of how that desire feels, how the temptation and giving in to our lust feels so necessary and important and seductive, and we don't want to let it go, but how like kind of ridiculous it is to not let it go, because there's something so much better on the other side, but it does hurt. It does hurt to give up. So that was an awesome story, man. I loved that. That was really, really, really great.
Yeah. I think that if you're listening to this, the Lewis like piece of like that lust being this thing that we, you know, nurture and listen to, it whispers to us and it tells us we can't live without it. And the invitation from Jesus is to let it go and to give it to him, and also to like know that there is this thing about the Bible, right? Like the Bible gives us human beings and bodies and sexual desire, and also tries to help us see and understand our relationship with God in light of those things.
Yeah.
It gives us, you know, Piper would say, when the Bible talks about sex, it gives us language for how we can understand this dynamic with the Lord.
Yeah.
Like the erotic, like, is supposed to inform, like, our loves for God.
Sure.
And I think the church can sometimes be very, again, like puritanical about this. And that's a modern use of the term. I think the Puritans actually were like talked about this stuff in a different way. But the idea is that we become pretty guarded about that language.
Yeah.
And, you know, we separate that from our relationship with God. Mm. And I think Lewis is inviting us into this place of seeing, look, that is supposed to inform us the strong, passionate, beautiful, like aspects of sex, or to inform like the nature of what we get from God when our loves are rightly ordered.
Yeah.
Like it is a explosive love and affection that can be present with you and the Lord.
Yeah.
And I think this Lewis story is trying to point us in that direction, right? So when the man gives, it allows his lust to be killed, allows the devil to be killed, right? That desire. The beautiful part of the story is that desire, he's transformed.
Right.
But also his desire is transformed.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Right. The desire becomes a stallion.
Right.
And in the first service, I read the quote, and the second, I was feeling a little bit crushed under time, but didn't read the actual quote from Lewis. But the stallion then runs to the heavenly mountains.
Right, right.
And Lewis's point is like, when we give our lust to the Lord and set our affections on something that can handle the affections, like desire runs to a better, higher, stronger place.
Right.
And I think that's what God wants for us, like yeah. when it comes to this desire.
Yeah.
It's like, if it's rightly ordered with the Lord, it can take off. It can, and it actually will it make sex even that much more of a good and beautiful and true thing in your life.
Yeah. No, that's great. And I think it's probably worth saying as well, that handing over of the lizard to be crushed, like in our own experiences, is probably not ever a one-time thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like Lewis's story is beautiful.
Right.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And, it'd be a less fun story if there was like 75 pages of the guy handing the lizard over again and again and again. But like, that's kind of more like real, like in our own experience and people that we counsel and people in our church, our friends. That yeah, it's a repeated repentance and something that we continue to do as we continue over and over to
right.
direct our desires to him,
right.
seek fulfillment in him, you know, beg and cry out for him to kill it. Right. But it is a journey.
Like the virtue piece in this, right? Like we could say the virtue piece in this is sobriety, right? So a restraint when it comes to our desires.
Yeah.
And when someone makes a move towards sobriety, if they have struggled with lust, if they've struggled with porn, if they've struggled with illicit relationships, if they've struggled with these things, and it's become a part of their like DNA almost.
Yeah.
There is a point of sobriety where you are like
right.
letting that thing be killed.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And it is a painful work.
Yeah.
Right. And I always tell someone who's in the process of like recovery, like relapse is part of recovery.
That's right. You hear that.
Right. Right. Like you yeah. have to, you're going to have many moments of relapse. And especially with this sin, when it's of the heart, sometimes yeah. hidden.
Right. Right.
Sometimes very much engaging our bodies, sometimes more just engaging our eyes and our minds.
Right.
Like it is a process of finding sobriety sometimes.
Yeah.
And yet I think that the bigger virtue is clear vision, which is what I talked about, is like the clear vision of seeing the thing that can hold your desires, the Lord himself, having a clear vision of like, again, rightly ordered that
yeah.
this desire can only be set free if I have my eyesight set on Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he's ultimately the one that kills the lizard, right?
Right.
He's
right.
the one that kills this in us.
Yeah.
Through the cross, through his life, through his yeah. resurrection power in the Holy Spirit.
Right.
Like, we have to lean on that, and yeah. we have to lean on the community
yeah.
of believers.
Yeah.
who are walking the same path that we're walking with.
Right.
And there's a part of like the sobriety, you know, walk is you can't do this by yourself.
Right. Like, right. Right.
You know, if you're struggling with this, like, you know, I would recommend like a group like Samson Society, where you join yourself with other followers
yeah.
who are struggling
yeah.
under the weight
yeah.
of this.
Yeah.
And I think it's the, you know, the female part of this, I think it's Sarah Society, I think is that's right, Samson Sarah. I don't remember exactly, but
yeah.
like that we walk this journey with other people.
Yeah.
Because the shame of this is real
right.
and the vulnerability piece is the painful killing piece. Like I can't possibly let anyone else know that this is my struggle.
Right.
And yet there's freedom. Like when we find ourselves in these places and we walk with other people and we share yeah. what's happening and they hold this with us.
Yeah.
And help us like get the other part of that is, you know, Samson's really good about also trying to deal with the thing beneath the thing.
Right.
Like help us see
right.
that it's not just the lust. It's the, like yeah. if you struggle with pornography, like one of the things about that is it's the control piece. Like, it is the freedom from vulnerability.
Mm.
It is the
yeah.
you know the nature of porn that's very elusive or not elusive, is very appealing.
Right, right, right.
Is that I can control this.
Right.
It's not another person.
Right.
I don't have to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
This
person demands nothing.
Yeah, becomes a coping mechanism to control the ways you're sad and the ways that life has undone you. And like those things are very real and they're the thing beneath the thing.
Right.
And, you know, there are groups out there that want you to get to those places.
Right.
And I quoted Jay Stringer.
I was going to bring that up too. Yeah, it was a good quote. Yep.
Yeah. So Jay, like, you know, he's kind of flipped this on its head in some ways and said, even the very things that you desire sexually are telling you things about your story.
Yeah.
And you might be appalled by those fantasies or things that you're living with, but he's like, no, you should be curious.
Yeah.
Because the only way to actually deal with this is to understand why.
Yeah.
And what parts of your story are aiming your heart in that way.
Yeah.
And thinking like, yeah, man, when I fantasize about this, I feel something.
Yeah.
Why is that true for you?
Yeah.
Those unwanted sexual desires.
Yeah.
That come upon you.
Right.
You're not looking even for them. They
right.
come upon you. Why do they come upon you?
Yeah.
And they're telling you something about your story.
Yeah.
And that's really important for you to work. You can't work that out necessarily by yourself.
Yeah, that's good.
And shame will keep you from like actually dealing with those things most of the time because you'll just be like so cut off from yourself. That's disgusting. Why would I fantasize or want that? What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
And that internal language will never get you to the place of freedom. It will just get you a place more bondage, I think.
Yeah. No, that's really good. I like that a lot. Yeah. I think that curiosity, interrogating, digging into your story. Yeah. Really important. Community, coming into the light, living in the light rather than in the darkness. Huge. Yeah. I think all that's really great. I was thinking too, one of the things we've tried to do in this series as well was like, and it is the season of Lent, is try to attach like different practices. Mm-hmm. And sobriety is a practice in and of itself, but it makes me think, as you said that, just about like the spiritual discipline of fasting, mm-hmm. right? That like choosing, which is traditionally food, doesn't have to be, but is traditionally food. And I think if you've never done a fast from food, I think it's worth doing.
Yep.
That the whole idea of that practice is to teach your body to be sober from mm-hmm. something. Mm-hmm. It's to discipline your body. And when your stomach growls at lunchtime on the second day, that you turn your attention to Jesus, you turn your attention to God and say, I need you. Like mm-hmm. I need your word. I need you. I need your spirit to satisfy and to fulfill, rather than food. And it's a practice that helps teach us and train us to make that proper turn, mm-hmm. to orient our desires in the proper way so that when a temptation comes that's related to lust or greed or whatever, that we've built some muscles to learn how to turn our attention to where it needs to go in those
moments. Right. It's a way of like managing our hunger and our hunger pains. It's like, how can we hunger for something that's can hold this?
Yeah.
And part of that is fasting. So you fast from something, hunger for God,
right?
To develop your taste buds for Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
fasting is a definite thing. I mean, I have some good friends. Their names are Rona and Eva Hunter. They do a lot of, you know, sex addiction counseling. Mm. They've written a book called Sex God. It's a great book, great resource if you find yourself in a very hard place with regards to this particular vice and you find yourself in like addictive practices. Their book Sex God's been super helpful. Mm. And it's, I think one of the things that they would, you know, recommend to somebody who's going through this process is sobriety means fasting for a season from sex, from touching your body, from like that is a process. And again, it's to develop different taste buds. It's also to cut off, like, again, amputation, like to cut off this thing for a season, for a stretch to experience freedom.
Yeah.
That's part of recovery, in the work of recovery. And so fasting is like a big part of a practice by which we can like help live out our true desires. Again, try to frame it and the positive, what you're getting out of fasting versus what you're giving up.
Right.
Can be helpful for our placebo brains.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, focus on the positive.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Unfortunately, like when I usually fast from food, it's like what I'm thinking about getting is weight loss, and that's not always the
sure
the true and pure desire either. Like yeah. There's something better.
Yeah.
Namely that yeah. you get Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's really good, man. Yeah, I'm glancing down at my notes here. I mean, I think we've touched on pretty much everything that I kind of noted, like whether illustration-wise or quote-wise or thematic-wise that I wanted to touch on. Yeah, you got to the virtue, which I think was great. I think really helpful. Talked about a practice a little bit. Yeah, man. Anything else on your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a very tender place for us.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's tender because of all the ways the church has like mishandled sex and desire.
Sure.
Inspired guilt and shame.
Right. Right.
Instead of freedom and life. So it's tender for that reason. It's tender because it's a sin particularly associated with our bodies.
Right. Right.
And so like we feel the tenderness of this because, man, to be naked and unashamed is a longing for us, but it's not something most of us know.
Yeah.
And so just our very nature of our bodies and the expression of sex with our bodies can feel very shameful.
For sure.
Yeah. Embarrassing, vulnerable.
Yeah.
So it's a very tender thing. And then it's tender because like this affects others beyond us.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're married and lust is a particular struggle, like,
yeah.
It affects not just you, but it affects your partner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it makes it very tender. And I know that many of you listening are living in these spaces.
Mm.
And I just want, I mean, I think it's just important to try to, these things are welcome here.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we want to walk with you with this, with a level of tenderness.
Yeah.
We want to form Redeemer to be a community that walks with us with a level of tenderness and a level of honesty and openness.
That's right.
About the way that we talk about sex.
Yeah.
We want to help you. I mean, part of the birds and the bees curriculum that we do right. in the children's ministry is to
right.
help you as a parent, like help your child learn how to talk, understand themselves
yep.
and their bodies right. as they are sexual beings.
Right, right.
And how do we talk about this with our kids at a young age in an yep. appropriate way?
Right.
How do we develop that kind of trust with our children over many years?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that they can come to us.
That's right.
And there, it like Redeemer, I mean, there is something beautiful when your kids can come to you.
Right.
And talk about these very tender
yeah.
places of their life. I've experienced this as a parent. It's obviously very disorientating,
yeah,
and but it's also very tender. And
yeah,
we want to help equip you to like show up in those spaces,
yeah,
and to be a place where you can show up in those places and expect that tenderness to be real.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's good. As you were talking, man, it made me think. I was at a pastor's gathering this past week in Oklahoma City, and one of the talks, Josh Curry, who was the lead pastor of the church we were at, he's talking to a room of about 200 pastors, elders. But and he's talking about ministry here, but he said, and I wrote this quote down, but he said, it's okay to feel alone. It's not okay to believe the lie that you actually are alone.
Yeah.
And I think as you were talking there, that came to my mind. And so I think in this context, what I want people to walk away with is you may feel alone on this topic, like whether you struggle with it, your child struggles with it, your spouse struggles with it. But like the reality is like you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
That you have a community around you. There are other people within our church community, other people that are followers of Jesus that, you know, are in the city, in the region, you know, and at the end of the day, like Jesus is always with you. Which was part of Josh's point too. Like you're not alone.
That's right.
And so, yeah, let's continue to press into these things.
Yeah, that's good. Last thing I'll mention is if you're looking for some resources beyond the ones that we've mentioned, like Jay Stringer has two books. One's called Unwanted. His newest book just came out this week. It's called Desire.
Oh,
wow. I've started reading it. I've found it to be the little bit of I've read so far is I think it's helpful in this regard of the things we've been talking about. And I'm sure there's lots of others.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Sure. Sure.
But you can always ask us for help with this.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for being here, Eric.
Yeah, dude. Good to chat and good to digest this and think about it a little bit more, man. It's been fun.
And if you're listening, thanks for listening to us. This is the After Hours Podcast. We're glad you've been here.